And I will call this meeting of the House Judiciary Finance and Civil Law Committee to order. Today is March 1st, 2022, and we are meeting remotely under Rule 10.01. It looks like there's a quorum present, but Anna, let's go ahead with the roll.
Chair Beckerman.
Present.
Vice Chair Mueller.
Present.
Representative Scott.
Present.
Representative Feist.
Present.
Representative Frazier.
Present.
Representative Grossel.
Present.
Representative Herr.
Present.
Representative Hollins.
Present.
Representative Johnson.
Present.
Representative Liebling.
Present.
Representative Long.
Present.
Representative Mortensen.
Present.
Representative Novotny.
Novotny present.
Representative Farr.
Present.
Representative Robbins.
Present.
Representative Vang.
Vang present.
And Representative Zhang. Madam Chair, a quorum is present.
All right, thank you. A quorum is present. First thing on the agenda is approval of the minutes from February 24th, 2022. Representative Robbins, do I have a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Right, thank you. Any discussion to the minutes of February 24th? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? And the minutes of February 24th, 2022 are approved. So now I'm going to hand the virtual gavel over to Vice Chair Mueller for the first bill on our agenda today. So you have the gavel, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair Beckerfin. So the next bill on the calendar is House File 3249, Chair Beckerfin's bill related to Secretary of State governing or administrative procedures modified. Chair Beckerfin, would you like to move that House File 3249 be referred to the General Register?
So moved, Madam Chair.
All right. And I don't see any amendments. So please go ahead and tell us about your bill.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. This bill is really similar to language that we heard last year related to the Safe at Home program. However, the bill last year had some other Secretary of State provisions in it that sort of held things up in the Senate. And so now we're moving the Safe at Home provisions on their own and giving them the attention that they deserve. And with that, I will turn it over to my testifiers. I believe we have Amber Bougie is our testifier today.
All right. Amber, if you are there, Ms. Bougie, please introduce yourself and begin your testimony.
Good morning, Madam Chair and committee members. I'm Amber Bougie, and I'm the Recorder and Registrar of Titles for Hennepin County. I'm also the co-chair of the Minnesota County Recorders Association Legislative Committee, which is part of the Minnesota Association of County Officers. This bill is also supported by the Minnesota Association of County Officers and is included in its legislative platform. I'd like to thank the Secretary of State's office for the opportunity to work with them to identify these technical changes to the Safe at Home language to help government entities better serve Safe at Home participants. I'd also like to thank Representative Beckerfin and Representative Mueller for authoring this House File 3249. I'm going to begin with a brief description of the Safe at Home General Notice changes. And the theme of this bill, as it relates to the general notice, is to tailor the protection afforded to the Safe at Home General Notice participant. And it does this in three ways. First, it allows the Secretary of State's office to create a form to collect the information local governments need so that they can accurately identify and protect Safe at Home General Notice participants. For example, if we have a Safe at Home General Notice participant with a common name, such as Charles Johnson, we may not be able to identify the records that need protecting without additional identifying information, such as a date of birth. Second, it requires the Safe at Home General Notice participant to specify the location data to be protected. And third, it creates a default that the participant's location will be protected, but not the identity of the participant unless that is specifically requested by the participant. And regarding these last two items, it's sometimes not feasible to protect a name or work location in county records. For example, if a county employee who interacts with the public would submit a safe at home general notice, the name and work location of that employee may be found in hundreds of government records. At the same time, we understand that participants most desire to protect a specific location for safety purposes. This bill clarifies that protection of specified location will only be the default unless otherwise requested. I'll now briefly cover the changes as they're applicable to the real property notice. A real property notice for safe at home applies prospectively to real property records, which are often public and important to commerce. It protects a safe at home participant's identity in connection with a specific property. The proposed changes to the real property notice portions of the statute clarify that the real property notice is not just notice to the county recorder, but also applies to all real property records held by a government entity, such as assessment and taxation records. The amendments clarify that the real property notice, instead of the general notice, applies to real property data outside of the county recorder's office. This includes data about real property held by other government entities, such as a city holding assessment or permit data. In all cases, the real property notice applies prospectively to new data created. These changes also provide a more effective government. The specific changes include changing the definition of real property records to now include data on assessments, data on real property, real or personal property taxation, and other data on real property. The next changes replace the reference to county recorder with government entity throughout to make it clear that the real property notice provisions apply to a government entity who maintains real property records. There are also some minor administrative changes with respect to the information in the notice, as well as notice of termination. The final change is allowing sharing of information between government entities for assessment and taxation purposes. Thank you for your time and the opportunity to testify this morning.
Thank you, Ms. Bouget, and I believe you are the only testifier, although Chair Becker-Finn, you do have a number of other people available to answer questions. And so with that, do we have any questions from the committee? All right, not seeing any questions. Chair Becker-Finn, do you have any other comments about the bill?
Appreciate the committee's support. The Safe at Home program is a unique program that we have in Minnesota that provides important protections to a lot of different people in our state, and just happy to support it going forward to make it function even better. And with that, I would renew my motion that House File 3249 be referred to the General Register.
Okay, having renewed your motion that House File 3249 be referred to the General Register, the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Becker-Finn.
Aye.
Vice Chair Mueller.
Aye.
Representative Scott.
Aye.
Representative Feist.
Aye.
Representative Frazier.
Aye.
Representative Grossel.
Aye.
Representative Hurt.
Aye.
Representative Hollins. Representative Johnson.
Aye.
Representative Liebling.
Hollins, aye.
Hollins, aye. Representative Liebling, one more time.
Aye.
Aye. Representative Long.
Aye.
Representative Mortensen.
Aye.
Representative Novotny.
Aye.
Representative Farr.
Aye.
Representative Robbins.
Aye.
Representative Vane.
Aye.
And Representative Sean. That is 16 ayes and no nays.
With a vote of 16 ayes and no nays, House File 3249 has been referred to the General Register, and I will turn the virtual gavel back over to Chair Becker-Finn.
Thank you, as always, Vice Chair Mueller. Next bill on our agenda, similar House File number, but very different, House File 3269. This is a Representative Hansen J. bill. And I will move House File 3269 be referred to Human Services. And with that, I will turn it over to Representative Hansen to tell us about her bill.
Good morning, everybody. And good morning, Chair Becker-Finn. Just a quick question about the referral. This came from Human Services, so I would like to make a motion to refer this to Workforce, if possible.
I will double check on where it needs to go. And then when I make the motion, we'll make sure we get that correct on the record, but I'll have staff double check.
Thank you.
Sometimes we do need to send things back to different places depending upon where things are happening, but we'll figure that out. You go ahead and tell us about what the bill does.
Thank you, Chair Becker-Finn. And thank you, members of the committee. HF 3269 seeks to further support Minnesota's commitment to data-informed approaches in evaluating and improving our public programs. DHS presently collects wage details from DEED to evaluate MFIP, and this bill seeks to allow DHS to use this same data to evaluate other public assistance programs too. This data already has very strict privacy requirements, and utilizing this information for MFIP has empowered DHS to better understand the labor market characteristics of people who have utilized the program and the program's efficacy overall. Expanding the usage of this data will further promote the utilizations of evidence-based methods to evaluate other public programs like SNAP, general assistance, supplemental aid, and housing support. A clear understanding of employment patterns with this data will allow the state to identify any barriers and opportunities to ultimately employ the necessary tools to continue to move more families, children out of poverty. And with that, Madam Chair, we have Deborah Schlick with DHS here to answer questions, and I will turn it back to you. Thank you.
All right, and just to clarify, is Ms. Schlick providing any testimony, or is she just here for questions?
She is here to answer questions for your
committee. Got it. All right, thank you, Representative Hansen. Members, any questions about this bill? Let me just double check that we've got the right motion here. Well, I guess I'm going to take your word for it. any closing comments on your bill?
Nope, that is all. We are scheduled for hopefully seeing ourselves in Workforce and those committee members that overlap. I will see you there soon. Thank you.
All right. So I will move to get it straight. House File 3269 be referred to the Workforce Committee. And with that, the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Becker-Finn.
Aye.
Vice Chair Mueller.
Aye.
Representative Scott.
Aye.
Representative Feist.
Aye.
Representative Frazier?
Aye.
Representative Grossel?
Aye.
Representative Herr?
Aye.
Representative Hollins?
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Liebling?
Aye.
Representative Long?
Aye.
Representative Mortensen?
Aye.
Representative Novotny?
Aye.
Representative Farr? Representative Farr?
Aye.
Representative Robbins?
Aye.
Representative Fang?
Aye.
And Representative John?
Aye.
That is 17 ayes and no nays.
All right, the motion prevails and House File 3269 is on its, and let me just make sure, 3269 is on its way to the Workforce Development Committee. With that, the next bill on our agenda is House File 2774. This is a Representative Greenman bill. I will move that House File 2774 be referred to Ways and Means. And with that, I will turn it over to Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Great timing. I'm grateful to be here. I think if it's okay, I'd love to start with, there's an amendment, A3.
All right, I will move the A3 amendment. It looks like these are just some technical fixes. If you could just confirm that, Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This was an amendment done with consultation with DALI to bring the enforcement provision more in line with the current OSHA and wage discrimination provisions. And so it removes an extraneous provision and provides the civil enforcement authority similar to other parts of the labor law.
Okay. Any discussion to the A3 amendment? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right. The A3 amendment is adopted. Representative Greenman, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, committee. I'm really grateful to be here to present House File 2774. This is a bill, a worker safety bill, about Minnesota's warehouses. It's a common sense requirement that big warehouse companies notify their workers of any quotas they're expected to meet and provide their workers with access to that data on how they're performing those quotas. The purview of this bill is under the under this committee is Subdivision 6 related to civil enforcement of this provision. I'll largely limit my comments to that, but I'll start with a brief explanation of the bill and why it's necessary. All Minnesota workers deserve to be safe and respected at work, but that's not the experience of many workers in Amazon's Minnesota warehouses. Instead, workers report being forced to work at a grueling pace under intense electronic surveillance and the threat of discipline. Workers report pushing themselves to the brink to meet quotas and time off task measures that are often changing and sometimes not even disclosed. Workers report not having enough time to take their breaks, to eat or use the bathroom because of this relentless pace. This has led to an injury rate that is double the injury rate in Minnesota warehouses that are not Amazon warehouses, and four times the injury rate in private industry generally in Minnesota. It's led to a turnover rate of 170% above all other warehouses in Minnesota. This provision is a modest and common sense response to a big worker safety problem. What it does is it simply requires warehouse companies to notify their workers of any quotas they'll be disciplined or fired if they fail to meet. And then it allows those workers to request access to that data on how they're performing. It protects workers' existing legal rights to ensure that any quota or performance standard won't interfere with their legal rights to take a break for a meal or use the restroom. It gives the Department of Labor and Industry the ability to enforce these provisions, and relevant to this committee, it ensures that workers have the power to enforce the provisions themselves. Subsection 6 provides a civil cause of action to ensure, in similar to what exists in Minnesota's OSHA and wage and hour laws, it ensures workers have the tools to enforce their rights under this provision themselves. This legislation will ensure workers have the information they need to keep themselves and their coworkers safe. With that, Madam Chair, I believe we have two brief testifiers, and I will turn it back over to you.
All right. Thank you. First on the list, I have Mohamed Mire. If you could unmute yourself, introduce yourself for the record, and then go ahead with your testimony.
Good morning. You hear me?
Yep, we hear you. Please go ahead.
My name is Mohamed, and I am an employer at Amazon, but not anymore. And I thank you for you, all of you, for your time. I have been working Amazon since 2017. When the people ask me about working at Amazon, I say that it's like you're trying to hold 18-wheeler truck with one hand and the driver is accelerating you. We are fighting against the machine, but we cannot win because we are human. I have seen so many injuries because of the pressure of the Amazon. I also tell the people that working Amazon is a little bit like being a blood donor. We are the people doing work, but no one sees us. I will say thank you, and I will really appreciate your time. And
right, thank you for your testimony today. Next on the list, I have Tyler Hamilton. If you could please introduce yourself for the record and go ahead with your testimony.
Hello, my name is Tyler Hamilton. I have worked at Amazon for 4.5 years now. I've worked across 3 different departments, multiple shifts. I've had lots of managers I've worked with and coworkers. And like Amazon, a lot of their problems have been become known to the public, things with safety issues. The injury rate is ridiculous. I've known far too many people who've gotten injured, and serious injuries too. And in 4.5 years, like working with coworkers, we have done a lot, both working with management and working around management, to try and keep each other safe and to try and like not have as many people getting injured and just being out of work and out of commission because of that. And like having this bill will be very useful to have some of those basic like disclosure requirements on the books. But beyond having those requirements, labor law doesn't mean anything if it cannot be enforced. There are existing labor laws that under current provisions is just extremely difficult to try and do through existing means. And allowing workers to have some ability to push back beyond what currently exists will only help, because this is a $1 trillion company. People don't realize how large Amazon is and the resources it has. And like, of course, like any worker trying to like push back against that whenever they have issues with their safety and they get injured is difficult. But any additional avenue that provides more outlet to try and get those things resolved will only help, because what we're doing right now just hasn't worked. Existing laws have not worked to keep workers safe. It's been 5 years since Amazon opened in Minnesota. And like we have the track record, we have the OSHA logs and the data, and it has not gotten better. So thank you, Representative Greenman, for all the work you've done in this bill. And thank you, committee, for your time.
All right, thank you for your testimony. I know there's a couple other people available for questions if members have them, but that is the end of my testifier list. So we will move on to discussion. Members, any discussion to the bill? Reminding you that we are, we're focused on subdivision six, the enforcement provisions. All right. Not seeing any hands. Representative Greenman. Representative Long.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I don't have a question. I just wanted to thank the testifiers for their bravery to come forward and speak to the committee. Probably is not a easy or safe feeling thing to talk about an employer in a public space and talk about safety issues. So I just wanted to thank both of you for taking your time to be here today and strongly support Representative Greenman's bill.
All right, thank you, Representative Long. And with that, Representative Greenman, any closing comments?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will keep it brief and let the testifiers speak for themselves. We had an hour and a half of testifiers and discussion in labor, and so appreciate this committee and think that this bill is ready to ensure that workers have access to the information that they need to keep themselves and their coworkers safe. So I'd ask for your vote.
All right. Thank you, Representative Greenman. With that, I will renew my motion that House File 2774, as amended, be referred to Ways and Means. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Beckerfin.
Aye.
Vice Chair Mueller.
Aye.
Representative Scott.
No.
Representative Feist.
Aye.
Representative Frazier.
Aye.
Representative Grossel.
No.
Representative Hurd.
Aye.
Representative Hollins.
Aye.
Representative Johnson.
No.
Representative Liebling.
Aye.
Representative Long.
Aye.
Representative Mortensen.
No.
Representative Novotny.
Novotny, no.
Representative Farr.
No.
Representative Robbins.
No.
Representative Fang.
Aye.
And Representative Zhang?
Aye.
That is 10 ayes and 7 nays.
All right, the motion prevails and House File 2774 is on its way to Ways and Means. Thank you to our testifiers. So now we'll move on to Representative Fisher's bill, House File 2908. I will move that House File 2908 be laid over. Representative Fisher, please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Chair Becker-Finn and committee for the opportunity to present House File 2908. This is a bill to address issues raised in a 2015 Environmental Quality Board Water Policy Report. In that report, it highlighted the issues of the increasing amount of chlorides entering the state's lakes, streams, and groundwater to the in some areas where it's to the point where we have a number of lakes who are reaching a threshold of being compromised. And so the big area where salt comes from is several different areas. One of them is from those that are applied as de-icers, water softeners, and also in uses in some agriculture areas. The area that this bill is focusing on today is the area of how it's applied as de-icers. And the report showed that when a certified smart salting training program was used, it could reduce salt use between 42 and 70% in instances that were shown. The report also mentioned that to provide an incentive to balance safety and environmental concerns, the state could limit liability for private applicators and business owners who contract with them if the private applicator goes through smart salting training and is certified. And this is necessary, we feel very strongly, as a process that we need to do to help reduce the amounts of salt that is flowing into our waters. The origins of this bill first came forward in March of 2018 when then Representative Anselmo brought this bill forward, and since then it has gone through several revisions to the point of where we are today. The bill itself would require the MPCA to develop a voluntary training program for commercial applicators to promote best management practices and provide certification to those who completed the training and passed the exam. And those that did, it would provide certain protections, liability protections from damages arising from snow ice hazards on the property. And that is the part of the bill that is going to be before this committee today, is dealing with the liability section. I do know that, if I remember correctly, there's a testifier too, and I will stop my presentation at this point for them. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Representative Fisher. We do have several testifiers, so we'll move on to that. First up, I have Evan Mulholland. If you could unmute yourself, introduce yourself for the record, and then go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair Becker-Finn. Thank you, Representative Fisher, for taking this proactive approach to the problem of salt pollution in Minnesota water bodies. My name is Evan Mulholland. He, him pronouns. I'm an attorney at the Minnesota Center for Environmental Advocacy. We're a nonprofit organization with almost 50 years of experience using law and science to protect Minnesota's environment. I and MCA support this bill, House File 2908, which takes modest yet significant steps towards addressing this environmental salt problem. So before I moved to Minnesota, I was an assistant attorney general in New Hampshire, and I was part of passing similar legislation regarding liability for salt applicators in New Hampshire in 2013. Although there are differences between this House file and the current law in New Hampshire, they share something important, which is the adoption of these best management practices, certification and reporting requirements, and language that addresses civil liability for applicators who are certified and also follow the BMPs. State and local governments are already taking steps to reduce salt use while also protecting public safety. This bill addresses the private applicators, which, as you know, are 25% of the overall salt budget. We need a different approach. Section 3 of this House file provides a limited liability waiver for certified applicators who follow the BMPs, the best management practices. The precise wording of this is always the most challenging part, since the reality is that hardly any slip and fall cases go to trial. They're all settled out of court or addressed outside the legal system entirely. One important aspect of this legislation as it pertains to liability is the establishment of the BMPs, the best management practices in statute, and a route to be certified as following them. That will be a strong and useful defense against any liability claim. We're aware of concerns from the applicators that the current language in Section 3 is not as strong as they would like it to be, but this is a good bill. and provides a clear signal about what the best establishes best management practices and says what they are for Minnesota. As with any statute that affects liability, it will take some time to assess the impact of this law. But the goal here is to give a signal that applying less salt in ways that maximize effectiveness is the right approach. Otherwise, we'll continue to see these big piles of salt on the sidewalk, which are used as a symbol of action and effort, even when it pollutes our water and doesn't do anything to make us safer. So in closing, I want to remind everyone that de-icing salt is widely overused and overapplied in Minnesota. And the impact is permanent. We should address it now. I encourage everyone to consider themselves smarter salting practices. I personally don't use salt. I use sand and training. And to address this issue by please moving this bill forward. I'm happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. The next testifier I have on the list is Connie Forkin. If you could unmute yourself, introduce yourself for the record, and go ahead with your testimony.
Madam Chair, representatives, my name is Connie Forkin. I'm a senior project manager with Bolton and Mink. I'm pleased to be here today. I've spent 25 years working on chloride reduction strategies. I've developed and I teach the Smart Salting certification classes for the MPCA, which are currently all grant funded and have been for many, many years. We're always piecing it together. I've written all the manuals that accompany our training classes. I've been in front of more than 20,000 winter maintenance professionals talking about the huge chloride problem Minnesota faces and explaining ways to integrate science into winter maintenance so we can reduce salt use. I'm viewed as a leader in chloride reform across America. MPCA is also viewed as a leader across the nation with their Smart Salting program. We are highly respected regarding their proactive work on chloride reduction strategies. So we are number one clearly in the nation moving this topic forward. It's time for our elected officials to help the private side of winter maintenance reduce salt use. The training program and its funding and the limited liability legislation is needed. Minnesota is the most progressive state in understanding the chloride problem and taking action. Last year, MPCA released a statewide chloride management plan. It asks every single person in Minnesota to use less salt. It's the first of its kind in the nation. All the other cold weather states are watching us. Okay, we have flattened out the rate of change in chloride in our groundwater. So the United States Geological Survey did some monitoring from like 1990 to 2010, and they showed a huge rate of change in our groundwater in regards to chloride. And that rate of change went all the way from Minnesota to the east coast of the U.S. USGS did some monitoring from 2010 to 2020, and Minnesota's rate of change flattened out, whereas the east coast of the U.S. didn't. They still have a real high rate of change. So we think this is largely because of the training that we've been doing. Now, early estimates by Heinz Steffen and the St. Anthony Falls Laboratory told us that in our seven most populated counties, that the salt use was pretty even between MnDOT, the cities, the counties, and the private side. Now, we've seen some pretty good change with MnDOT, the counties, and the cities, okay? But we have not seen that same rate of change with the private side, and that's why we need your help. The private side is a huge contributor to our problem. I know if we can get them into training and reduce their fear of lawsuits, they will have less barriers to follow best practices. Fear of lawsuits causes them to overreact and pour down the salt thicker than necessary. And I'm sure today, when you go to your grocery store, your restaurant, your pharmacy, you will see evidence of this everywhere we look. It isn't for safety. Okay? So we can have safe surfaces, reduce the waste, protect our water, protect our infrastructure, and move us all ahead. I just want you to know there'll be no reduction to safety if we simply apply best practices. Thank you for your good work. We are all counting on you to help us protect Minnesota's water. We have 10,000 good reasons to pass this legislation. I'd be happy to answer your questions.
All right, thank you for your testimony. We will move on to the next testifier. I have Sue Nissen. If you can introduce yourself and then go ahead with your testimony.
Chair Becker Finn, members of the committee, I want to thank Representative Fisher for this important legislation. My name is Sue Nissen. I'm a Minnesota water steward and I'm a citizen volunteer with Stop Over Salting, and we're here in support of House File 2908 because it's good for clean water, for infrastructure, for commercial salt applicators, and for maintaining public safety using less de-icers, and here's why. I brought with me my 5-gallon Home Depot bucket and a teaspoon to illustrate the power, the pollution power of a small amount of de-icer. Just one teaspoon dissolved in this bucket full of water brings the water in here to the EPA standard of toxicity for aquatic life. And removing those de-icers is expensive and impractical, so they're becoming a permanent part of our fresh water. The result is Minnesota's fresh waters are becoming saltier and saltier every year. Now, we don't see that dissolved de-icer because salty water looks clear, but the data is in. We've got 50 water bodies above the EPA impairment. We've got 75 more close to tipping over it. We've got upward trends in our drinking water monitoring wells. In Minnesota, we use maybe around estimated 400,000 tons of de-icer a year, and that's a lot of teaspoons of de-icer. So Stop Over Salting volunteers, we frequently talk with commercial applicators and property managers. We find many aren't trained in their industry best practice, and overwhelmingly, there is a pressure to oversalt because visible salt on a property is believed to provide protection from slip and fall lawsuits. The combination of the two is driving the overapplication. We also find that most applicators are acutely aware of the destructive side effects of the de-icers, and they tell stories of loving their lakes. They worry about fishing in the future. They are super frustrated over wasteful infrastructure damage and replacing dead landscaping year after year. However, at the end of the day, those same applicators need to protect their small businesses, and currently over-applying de-icers does just that. So the opportunity for liability protection is an incentive for the commercial applicators to enroll in MPCA's highly effective smart salt training. It's voluntary. It teaches science-based best practice. We also attend those trainings, and we see applicators return to their companies with great enthusiasm for reducing de-icer because they know they can do so and maintain public safety. They report 40 to 70% reductions after their training. So at SOS, we have a vision for Minnesota that every teaspoon of de-icer counts in a positive way. This bill is a real and necessary step in that direction. So please support House File 2908. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. The last testifier I have on the list is Joel Carlson. Please introduce yourself and then go ahead with your testimony.
Well, good morning, Madam Chair and members. I'm Joel Carlson. I own a legal research and government affairs business here in St. Paul, and I'm here on behalf of the Minnesota Association for Justice. And we've long supported the training components and the liability rules of the road that are in this bill, and we've spent a lot of time on it. In fact, I am now a certified salt applicator. I've taken the course. I understand what they're teaching, and I appreciate it, and we support that. But much like the education we need about salting, I think we need a little bit of education about our civil litigation system in Minnesota and what's going on. And quite frankly, the fear of lawsuits is probably as overused as the salt that is the subject of this bill. In 2021, there were 2,000 personal injury cases filed in Minnesota for our 5.7 million people. That number is down 55% over the last two decades. There's no litigation in explosion in Minnesota. And to put that in perspective, in 2021, there were over 7,000 contract cases, which are usually businesses litigating with each other over their business disputes. We respect their rights to be in court, but we also want to make sure that average Minnesotans have their rights to go to court as well. One other thing you need to know about liability in Minnesota before we get to Section 3 of the bill. Since 1969, Minnesota has recognized the primary assumption of risk. We assume the risk of our own activities in Minnesota, and that includes walking on slippery surfaces in Minnesota. That just comes with our territory. I think that's why there's no real litigation or case issues as it relates to these slip and fall cases, but the fear is there, and we recognize that, and this bill seeks to address that. Section 3 of the bill, on line 2.16, lays out the rules of the road for SALT applicators. And what it says is that if they take the training and they use their best practices, that they won't have liability for a subsequent injury unless they didn't follow their training or best practices, they knew of a dangerous condition and didn't do anything, or they were somehow negligent in their activity as it relates to the care of their property for building owners and SALT applicators. These putting these rules of the road into this legislation and making it part of the training can help SALT applicators use less product. And so we have been supportive of this bill. But let's be also clear about what the bill doesn't do. It doesn't absolve SALT applicators or building owners of their liability to act responsibly to the customers and people that they invite onto their property. If they're negligent, they still have liability, and that's how it should be. That's how we treat everyone. It doesn't lower the standards for them of how they treat safety on their property, and it doesn't limit the rights of Minnesotans if they have been injured through someone else's wrongful conduct to bring a claim. We think that strikes the appropriate balance. We've long supported this bill. We're happy to answer questions, Madam Chair. And I know there is an A2 amendment, and I'd probably like to be heard on that if you do take up that amendment as well. So appreciate your time and all the work that's gone into this. About 5 years, I think, that this has been around. We're not the holdup. We're ready to support this bill and the compromise that is in it. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. I don't have any other testifiers on the list, but I do think the liability portion of the bill is obviously what's before us here in this committee, but I think it's a critical part of this bill. As someone who also has served on the Environment Committee for the last 6 years, have heard this bill come forward again and again and again every single year. Representative Fisher, I believe it was Representative Anselmo, who initially carried it in 2017 and 2018. But, you know, I recognize that this has been an ongoing conversation, but just hasn't gotten done. And there have been different versions of the language and different amendments floating around, but I did think it was important that we have a discussion here in this committee, that we not sort of skip over the conversation about the liability portions as we are the Judiciary Committee. And sort of to that, Representative Fisher, if you could speak a little bit about, you know, the current language, and if this is, I know we have some written testimony from some folks who don't believe that this written language will be effective at what we're trying to accomplish. If you could just speak to the liability portion as far as what you're hoping this language will accomplish, recognizing that I know you're not an attorney, but doing your best.
Thank you, Chair Beckerpin, and that's correct. I'm not an attorney, so on a lot of these issues, I defer more to those who are the attorneys out here. I know that the input that I've received from people who would be involved with this, particularly applicators, is their concerns is that the liability is not enough out there, and they've mentioned to me, while there aren't many cases filed, it's because many of the times these are settled out, you know, without going to court, that the insurance companies just pay and go, and pay off the claim, and therefore it ends up being charged eventually against the insurance rating experience that the individual companies have out there. And so that is the concerns that they've expressed, is that they appreciate the training out there, they appreciate us starting to address the liability, but they do not feel what we have out there is strong enough that can help them, particularly when they're dealing with the insurance companies, is that the insurance companies will still pay out these claims even though they're following best management practices.
Thank you, Representative Fisher. And I think, you know, the question before us today is really, do we want this bill to be a bill that just sort of has some training and encouragement for businesses, or do we want there to be some sort of incentive built in with the liability piece? And so I think that's an important part of the conversation. So the A2 amendment, I filed for conversation discussion purposes, because again, I think this is the committee that needs to sort of vet this fully in the public and talk about what it is that we think is good practice. So I'm not going to move the A2 amendment at this time, but if members, if you have questions or discussion, or if you want to weigh in on this liability portion of the bill, now is your chance. Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had a brief question for Mr. Mulholland, if I might.
Sure.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had a question. I know you said that similar legislation was passed in New Hampshire. Is it a voluntary program in New Hampshire as well, or is it required by the state?
Mr. Mulholland.
Chair Becker Finn, Representative Scott, can you just clarify, do you mean the training, the BMPs in the training?
Representative Scott.
Thanks, Madam Chair. I'm asking you, I believe you stated that a similar law passed in the state of New Hampshire, and I'm asking if that law is mandated by the state that people, get this certification. If it's in this bill, in Minnesota's bill, it's voluntary. Is it voluntary as well in New Hampshire? Maybe that's a better way of phrasing the question.
Thank you,
Mr. Mulholland.
Chair Finn, Representative Scott. Yes, it's voluntary. You can be a salt applicator without the certification.
Okay, Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Mulholland, how does New Hampshire's law have the same or similar liability protections as the language currently in this law without the amendment?
Mr. Mulholland.
Chair Becker Finn, Representative Scott, I believe that the New Hampshire law has protection that is a bit stronger than the current law without the amendment. And I believe it talks about gross negligence or reckless disregard, things like that.
Representative Scott.
I can share that with the committee. Right. You could look it up.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Mulholland. I was planning to vote for the bill if your amendment went on, Madam Chair. I know, I believe we're just laying this over. Is that correct, Madam Chair?
That was the initial plan, but we have more time to discuss than I thought we might today, because we moved through the other three bills really quickly. So, this is sort of the time. We have the opportunity here today. We've got time in committee if we want to discuss that and talk about moving the amendment or not moving the amendment. I'm certainly open to that. I think it's our job as the legislators to figure out what the best language is and then move that forward. So that's sort of my intention. But again, it's ultimately the will of the committee if we want to move something forward. So Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the reason I think your amendment is important is, to me, the entire purpose of this bill and the whole certification and everything is to provide some an extra layer of protection, if you will, against lawsuits. And I feel like that's what your amendment does. Without it, I don't think the purpose of going through the certification process and businesses adhering to and hiring these companies that have gone through it, I don't think it does what it intended. So that's my comment, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. And I guess I would sort of ask, as a business owner, as a property owner, I know we have folks on our committee that own small businesses or different properties, and I think that your point is probably correct, that there's sort of, if there isn't the liability protection, there's not maybe the incentive to make the changes for some folks. So, I think that's sort of that's certainly on the table to discuss that. If ultimately the goal is to just sort of, hey guys, this bill is telling you there's a good program you should do. Well, I mean, that's fine. That's There's nothing wrong with that. But if we also want to incentivize people to make those changes quickly, I think that's where the liability piece comes in. Additional discussion, members? Representative Liebling.
So thanks, Madam Chair. And I don't have experience with this issue, so I'm really just listening and kind of tossing out an idea, and it might be off base, so sorry if it is. But just thinking about it and what Representative Scott is saying and what we heard from, about the liability piece, what is the harm? If the concern is that without the amendment, that the liability protection isn't strong enough to incentivize people to do this program, what's the harm in starting with it as currently written? And then if it doesn't work, we can come back and strengthen the liability protection. I mean, would there be a downside to that? Because it sounds to me like from listening to the conversation, like the issue here is whether it will work without stronger liability. And it seems to me that's somewhat of an empirical question that we could maybe try it as is and see if it works. That's my thought.
I guess as someone who's been looking at this bill for 5 years now, I think, there's, and just to be honest, so folks know what some of the internal conversations have been over the years is, if it's just sort of putting money into a program with the MPCA, is that enough? And if they get, if that side gets what they want as far as the money for the program, then the incentive to have folks come back and fight for additional protections is maybe not there. And I certainly wouldn't want it to take another 5 years for us to do anything else. I also know there are some members in both bodies that feel that they wouldn't support the bill without the liability piece being part of it. So I think, this has been a unique bill over the years as far as the way that it brings sort of clean water advocates together with small business folks and the chamber, the business side of things, where people actually agree that this might be a program that has benefits. But I'm not sure that we would have the support sort of to what Representative Scott stated. I don't know that we would have the support in both bodies if it's not sort of the full package of the intention of the bill. Any follow-up, her camera went off, so I'm going to guess that answered your question. Representative Hollins.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to thank Representative Fisher for bringing this forward because I think this is a really important piece of legislation. And I love the incentive piece of it. I think that it's powerful and it provides, with this amendment, it would provide some real teeth to try to get small businesses on board. My experience, especially I didn't do any personal injury law when I was practicing law. So my experience is very limited, but my inclination would be to say that this amendment is very necessary in order for small businesses to get on board because having a standard of negligence is just, that's not really doing much, really, right? Like that's not an incentive for individuals. And so I would be in support of the amendment. But I do think I would probably support this bill either way. To Representative Liebling's point, we could get data and information about how it goes, but I do think that to really create some incentive there, having the gross negligence standard would make a lot more sense. And I also keep coming back in my head to this, this thought of the reality of lawsuits is that they are long and they are painful and they are expensive. And, especially for a lot of small business owners, waiting and going through discovery process, like I think we kind of throw that idea around like, oh, well, you just make it through discovery and then, either it works or it doesn't work. It's like, it takes a lot. It's a lot of time. It's a lot of money. And really, for small businesses that are just starting out, that can really do you in, just going through that discovery process, even if you're found that, you know, it doesn't reach to this level of negligence. So if we could make it stronger to a gross negligence, I think that would help us from, you know, going through that process unnecessarily and costing business owners additional funds. So that's my two cents.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Hollins. And I think for the public's benefit, if you haven't, and also for members, if you haven't looked at the letter from the Minnesota Nursery and Landscape Association, they didn't sign up to testify, but I think sort of, I know that some people, when they hear liability and negligence and all these legal terms, they maybe stop computing what we're trying to say. And I think, you know, the point that they made in their advocacy was sort of the language as it is in this current form, without the amendment, sort of says there's no liability for you. But then there's a bunch of exceptions, and the exceptions are sort of like, unless there's negligence, which is sort of the base level of which most initial claims might come across. So it sort of says that it does something, but then in the exceptions takes away any ability for that to actually mean something in practice. Any follow-up, Representative Hollins?
No, thank you. Yeah, I should have spelled out exactly what I was saying initially, but that is my concern. So thank you.
Yeah. Representative Novotny.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to respond quickly to Representative Liebling's question about what's the harm. The harm is the fear that this is an optional thing at this point, and the next thing we know, that'll be required. And that is our hesitation, or at least my hesitation and incrementalism. If it's the right thing to do, businesses will do the right thing. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Johnson.
Chair Becker-Finn, Representative Fisher. I understand what you're trying to do with this, but I also, my family has a small business that we try to put out as much salt as necessary on the sidewalks. We have to have, when it's the parking lots get bad, we have to hire a company to come in and put sand and salt, usually more sand than salt. Because we, in our business, we have a lot of seniors that come in. We've been involved and had to deal with the fall issues. It's not, most of them are taken care of right away. The insurance company that we have do a good job working with the individuals, making sure their medical bills are taken care of. But the problem with that is when you start having a few of these claims, your insurance rates go up to the point you cannot afford them. And that makes it worse. So the liability issue is a huge issue that needs to be taken care of, because we only want to put out enough salt, and usually we try to use more sand than salt, but to make sure that, especially with our senior citizens, they don't fall and get hurt. Fall by a senior is much more dangerous than somebody in their 20s, even though they could get hurt. But we want to make sure our seniors are safe as well. So we try to put on just as much salt as that is necessary to keep the ice away, because we understand it is a serious issue and a slip and fall issue, especially affecting the senior citizens.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. And I have a question for you then, because I think this is sort of the heart of what we're getting at. If following best management practices meant that you were using less salt, would you be more likely to follow those best management practices if you knew that you would be immune from basic liability for negligence?
I don't know if we actually would have time to go to a program like that, because we don't hire a company. We might have a company come in maybe once every 3 years to do our park, just to sand and salt our parking lot. A lot of businesses do not have companies come in. So that's where the issue is. A lot of them only use salt on their sidewalks. They might have somebody come in if it's an ice storm and their parking lots are covered with ice, just to cover that area. But generally, in our area, it's just the sidewalks that are salted by the private citizen. in the small businesses. So it's different because we don't have the huge, generally have the huge corporations with huge parking lots, because we're small businesses and the parking's on the street. So it changes things once you get outside of the metro area.
I can say that there are plenty of small businesses in the metro area, and this may be, I don't think this is one of those bills where there's any difference between the metro area and rural Minnesota. Representative Fisher, do you have any comments, or if you could speak to, you know, how long this training program would be for a small business in order to learn these best management practices, that might be helpful.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm probably not the best to answer that. I do believe one of my testifiers would be able to do that. I can see your hand up. Thank you.
Actually, I see Tom Johnson from MPCA has his hand up. So I'm going to go to Mr. Johnson, if you can introduce yourself and then go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. We do have a 4-hour online course for those who are not able to attend in person or might be living maybe busy or maybe living far away from one of our centers.
And Mr. Johnson, does that program exist right now, or do you need the funding in order to have that program?
The online course, Madam Chair, does exist right now. And the regular SALT applicator course is 6 hours. So okay. Both of them excuse me.
Well, I was just going to ask, how many people have participated in that program?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would have to get back to you with those numbers.
Okay, thank you. I usually don't go to testifiers to be part of the discussion, as testifiers are here to provide testimony and the discussion is between us as members. Any further discussion to the bill? As I said, I think this is sort of one of those unique things where this isn't necessarily a, hyper partisan bill. I think it really comes down to how you see the liability portion and whether we want that to be an incentive or not. And so I guess Representative Fisher, as the chief author of the bill, I would turn to you to ask what your preference would be as far as whether we amend this bill today or whether you'd like to continue to discuss things with others. It certainly seems that there's at least some stated support for the amendment, but I will leave it to you as the chief author to sort of make that call.
Thank you, Chair Becker-Finn. And as the chief author, this has been a bill that has evolved over the years to where it is right now. I've heard the concerns that have been mentioned by Mr. Carlson. I've also heard the concerns that have been mentioned by the landscapers and some of the other folks out there about the concerns about the liability side. And I recognize that this kind of bill is something that has really changed because of the input that we've received as we've gone through the committee process. And I feel very strongly that if the committee feels that they could, that an amendment onto this will improve the bill, I'd be very open to accepting that amendment and continuing the discussion as we go through the process. It's not like this would be the end all be all. I mean, there's still other opportunities for future discussion, but I very much value what I'm hearing here from the committee members, the discussion that's going on back and forth, and appreciate the input and guidance.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Fisher. And you're not on my committee, but I say all the time, I believe in the committee process. Yeah. And there's a reason that it takes so long. It doesn't always need to take 5 years, but there's a reason there are multiple stops and places to find compromise on things. So I would move the A2 amendment. And then members, is there any additional discussion to the A2 amendment? All right, seeing none, all those in favor of the A2 amendment, please say aye.
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 Opposed? All right, the A2 amendment is adopted. And so to that, any further discussion to the bill as amended? All All right. And given that, you know, we were able to reach consensus here as a committee on the liability portions, I would amend my motion. So I would now move that House File, there's a lot of, I'm having trouble keeping track of my numbers today. House File 2908 as amended be referred to the Environment Committee. My understanding is that because that's where the funding is happening, that it does need to go back to the Environment Committee. So that would be my motion, that House File 2908 as amended be referred to the Environment and Natural Resources Committee. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Becker-Finn.
Aye.
Vice Chair Mueller.
Aye.
Aye. Representative Scott.
Aye.
Representative Feist.
Aye.
Representative Frazier.
Aye.
Representative Grossel.
Aye.
Representative Herb.
Aye.
Representative Hollins.
Aye.
Representative Johnson.
Aye.
Representative Liebling.
Aye.
Representative Long.
Aye.
Representative Mortensen.
No.
Representative Novotny.
No.
Representative Farr?
No.
Representative Robbins?
Aye.
Representative Vang? Representative Vang? Representative Zhang?
Aye.
And Representative Vang? Okay, so that is... That is 14, that is 13 ayes and 3 nays.
Grossel changes to no.
That is 12 ayes and 4 nays.
All right. Good job with the math, Anna. Thank you. With that, the motion prevails and House File 2908 as amended is on its way back to the Environment and Natural Resources Committee. And with that, we've got one more bill on the agenda. Representative Scott, is House File 3454. Would you like to move your bill be referred to the General Register?
Yes, Madam Chair, that's my motion.
All right, great. Representative Scott, please go ahead and tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 3454 is a technical fix to clarify how complaints can be served. The 2021 legislation on forfeiture reform contained parallel structures for both DWI and controlled substances. However, there were some differences in the two sections, including how complaints are served. In the DWI sections of the 2021 bill, complainants were allowed to serve documents to the prosecutor by certified mail or by means permitted by court rules. For controlled substances forfeitures, the 2021 language stated the complainants could serve the complaint by any means permitted by court rules. These differences were a cause for some confusion, so the courts brought this to the attention of the legislature. This bill seeks to align the two sections by making the language identical for both DWI and controlled substances forfeitures, allowing complaints to be served by certified mail or by any means allowed by the court rules. It also clarifies the rules for service depending on whether the forfeiture is challenged in district court for those cases that are over $15,000 and for conciliation court for cases under $15,000. This language has support of the stakeholder groups and the courts. And with that, Madam Chair, I would answer any questions.
All right. Members, any comments, questions, discussion? High five to all of us for getting the forfeiture bill passed last year, especially Vice Chair Mueller. Makes sense that in a very long, I think our omnibus bill last year was one third the forfeiture provisions. So it makes sense that we'd have a couple of technical things that we need to clean up after the bill's been enacted. Vice Chair Mueller.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to thank Representative Scott for bringing this bill forward and for her work and this committee's work and all of the stakeholders, again, who worked so hard on the forfeiture bill that we passed last year. It really was remarkable. Again, those stakeholders actually entered into mediation to come up with that language. And so just wanted to take this opportunity once again to thank everybody and also, again, Representative Scott for bringing this bill today.
All right. Thank you, Vice Chair Mueller. Representative Liebling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I also am grateful to Representative Scott and all the stakeholders and everybody that's worked hard on forfeiture reform, because it's been a long, long road. My little question to Representative Scott about this is just to make it clear whether or not this makes the process simpler for the complainant to file their action to get their stuff back, because that's what we're talking about, right? Often it's people who don't have a lot of wherewithal in the court system who get their stuff taken and need to be able to get into court to get it back. So could you just be really clear, is this not making an not making it harder or easier? Is it making it a little easier to figure out what the rules are, or exactly what does it do in that regard? Thank you very much for doing this. I don't need to speak again. I'll just take the answer. Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Representative Liebling. Representative Scott.
Madam Chair, thank you. I think that it probably just makes some clarification to people. I think one section, the DWI section, was a little bit clearer in that it gave both options to the complainants of either certified mail or by court rule. And the other section for controlled substances, I think I'm getting this right and not getting it turned around, only said by court rule. So this just provides consistency. And so by that measure, it would probably make it a little easier and more clear.
Yeah, and to remind members too, this is a bill that originated from the courts kind of coming back once we passed the law and saying, hey, here's a couple things that would make this function better in the real world in the court system. Any further discussion to the bill? All right, closing comments, Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for hearing the bill, and thank you for Representative Moeller for the bipartisan work on this. And to House Research, Ben Johnson, I know they don't like to be called out much, but he was very helpful in clarifying all this, and I'm very appreciative and would ask for member support.
All right. With that, Representative Scott renews her motion that House File 3454 be referred to the General Register. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Becker Finn.
Aye.
Vice Chair Moeller.
Aye.
Representative Scott.
Aye.
Representative Feist.
Aye.
Representative Frazier.
Aye.
Representative Grossel.
Aye.
Representative Herr.
Aye.
Representative Hollins.
Aye.
Representative Johnson?
Aye.
Representative Liebling?
Aye.
Representative Long?
Aye.
Representative Mortensen?
Aye.
Representative Novotny?
Novotny, aye.
Representative Farr?
Aye.
Representative Robbins?
Aye.
Representative Vang? Representative Vang? Representative Zhang?
Aye.
And Representative Vang? That is 16 ayes and no nays.
The motion prevails and House File 3454 is on its way to the General Register. I will, for the record, Representative Vang had a bill presentation in another committee. She is not being derelict in her duties. She just can't be in two places at the same time. I've tried the double Zoom thing and it's really hard. So I just want to recognize that. That wraps up our agenda for today. But I do just want to, communicate my thanks to this committee. We had two bills from our committee pass off the House floor yesterday, and I really appreciate our ability to work on these smaller bills that make our statutes work better for people. And I think this committee does a really great job of moving these things forward, and glad that we could send the Scott bill to the General Register as well. And with that, thank you, members, as always, for the discussion. With that, we are adjourned.